Welcome to The Brainstorm, a podcast and video series from ARK Invest. Tune in every week as we react to the latest in innovation and reflect on how short-term news impacts our long-term views. To learn more, visit ARK-invest.com.
ARK Investment Management, LLC is an SEC-registered investment advisor. ARK and Public are unaffiliated entities and do not have a relationship with respect to either firm marketing or selling the products or services of the other, and therefore ARK disclaims responsibility for any loss that may be incurred by Public's clients or customers. The information provided in this show is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision and is subject to change without notice. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK. An investor should determine for themselves whether a particular investment management service is suitable for their investment needs. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK and/or show guests and are not endorsements by ARK of any company or security or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in the show may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARK's current views and assumptions and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statements. ARK assumes no obligation to update any forward-looking information. ARK and its clients, as well as its related persons, may, but do not necessarily, have financial interests in securities or issuers that are discussed. Certain information was obtained from sources that ARK believes to be reliable. However, ARK does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information obtained from any third party.
Welcome to The Brainstorm, episode 44. We're going to be talking Llama 3 today. We have Joseph, who's, I think, leading the charge on the internet, tracking open source and closed AI models. So, Joseph, can you just break down Llama 3 for us? Where does it fall relative to other models? And then we can dive into some of the weeds.
Yeah, sounds good, Sam. So Meta's been leading this charge for a while on open models, starting with Llama, the first generation of Llama models back early in 2023. And since then, they've become one of the most visible and most used family of models to sort of fine tune and that developers have been experimenting with. Last week, Meta released two versions of Llama 3, which has been, I think, highly anticipated by a lot of the developer community. They released a small 8 billion parameter version, and then they released a larger, more performant 70 billion parameter version. And then maybe most interestingly, they also previewed a 400 billion parameter version, which is still in training, but they gave some early performance metrics for that as well. The impressive thing is the most performant version, the one that's still in training, the 400 billion version, that is starting to approach GPT-4 and Claude 3 levels of performance. So it's starting to become more competitive with closed models, which I think is a massive step in the right direction for open models being used as sort of the default for a lot of our day-to-day use cases.
All right, so then can you break this down for me? Because I feel like I've seen confusion out there. Maybe it's just my own confusion. Okay, 8 billion parameter versus 70 billion parameter. What? They arbitrarily set how many parameters, and 8 billion can be inferenced on a smaller device. Is that the advantage, even though it's less performant?
Right, exactly. Yeah, so one of the reasons why you're not just, you know, so you do have very large models like GPT-4, which is estimated to be in that 1.7 trillion parameter range. But one of the reasons why you'd want to keep a model small is you can inference it a lot more cheaply. So it's much lower cost to actually use the model and then serve it. It's much more portable as well, right? An 8 billion parameter model, roughly 32 gigabytes to download the entire thing. So it's something that you could feasibly run locally on certain devices, especially if you quantize it to make it smaller even more. It's not completely arbitrary, the number of parameters here. That it does have a pretty significant effect on performance and the cost.
Everyone's competing to buy GPUs. So number of GPUs doesn't impact parameters. It just impacts how quickly you can train and how many times you can train it in a set amount of time.
There's a balance, right, to the amount of compute that you have access to, the amount of data you have access to, and then the size of the model. Historically, you know, sort of where that balance lies is being defined by a very famous DeepMind paper from a while ago now, it feels like, that it's being defined by what's called chinchilla optimality, right? So the notion that there's sort of a fixed balance between the number of parameters, the amount of data that you have, and then the amount of compute that you have access to. One of the significant takeaways actually from Llama 3's announcement last week was that Meta was able to feed more data into this model than was previously thought optimal, and they didn't really see the diminishing returns to performance that you would expect. So they trained both versions of Llama 3 on 15 trillion tokens of training data, which is sort of far, far more than you would expect is optimal for the amount of compute they had access to and for the size of the models.
What do you think about the commercialization of Llama 3? Obviously, there's the open source nature of it, but assuming, I think we have a pretty good understanding that Zuckerberg and team will productize this, and that won't necessarily be open source. And that's, you know, typically how they've run the business.
Right, exactly. And I think Zuckerberg as well has hinted to the notion that certain things that they're going to develop in the future, like more multimodal capabilities, may not necessarily always be open source as well. I think they're on the right track to open source sort of their core foundation models, like I think the 400 billion parameter version will be open sourced. But yeah, not every model and not every product will be open sourced, of course. Yeah, I think it's encouraging to see it integrated into their social media platforms. I think one of the benchmarks that Zuckerberg was trying to hit with Llama 3 was a model that you could actually integrate across Meta's social media platforms and that you could actually give people access to. And sort of it was supposed to be high enough quality that you could do that and not be too worried about it, you know, underperforming massively, right? So I think this is the first generation that you can roll out on a large scale. I'm sure we'll be seeing versions of it soon on Meta smart glasses. I'm excited to see sort of the breadth of products that they integrated into.
Yeah, I think watching this story unfold, and I've come on here a few times and talked about my appreciation for Meta and what Zuckerberg have been building, but I do think that they have the most cohesive strategy within AI and the distribution to implement it. I think, you know, there's a lot of questions on how do you commercialize this? How do you monetize it? Are people going to be paying a subscription on a monthly basis? Or is this a feature that's rolled into a larger suite of products? And, you know, I don't think anyone knows the right answer yet. We have opinions and thoughts on how this could play out, but it's not really correct to assume anything is a given at this point in time. But when you look at what Meta is doing, you know, with Llama 3, their implementation of it across Instagram and its other family of apps, they just put one of the most performative models in the world in the hands of billions of people. And I think that should not go unnoticed or unappreciated, because that is, at the end of the day, how these get better, right? You need this reinforcement, this flywheel effect of, you know, how are people using this? How do we want to continue to develop this? Where exactly do we want to put our efforts when it comes to introducing these large language models and chatbots? And I thought what was interesting, and I want to open it back up to both of you, you know, Zuckerberg has now done a bit of a roadshow around Llama 3. You know, he perfectly timed a podcast. He's done some other interviews. And I think, you know, what he's hinting at is, at least with Llama 4, right, in this space moves so fast, everyone's already, okay, what's Llama 4 going to look like?
GPT-5.
But he's talking, right, GPT-5, Llama 4, Llama 10. It's right. It's how does this become more agentic in nature? So giving it more complicated tasks to allow it to go out on its own and develop or complete tasks for you. I think that's where it really becomes interesting. And especially for Meta, because if you think about the integration of WhatsApp and what Instagram has turned into as this, you know, full service potential shopping destination, but business communication platform. There's a lot of different ways to integrate that when you already are hosting one. I think Facebook's family of apps now reach 3.98 billion people globally. And then you think about the number of businesses that are there as well. I mean, it's quite the story if you can execute on the strategy. And I'm not sure, you know, even when you think about OpenAI and some of these other players out there, they don't have that. And that, I think, is something to focus on here when it comes to the larger names making waves in AI. They also have these legacy products that have massive distribution. And I feel like I always am pounding on the table saying this, but I do think it's important to realize, you know, because we don't know if this is going to be a feature or a product. But I'm curious what your both of your thoughts are, having heard kind of this and also what Zuckerberg is going out there saying about how they plan to introduce Llama 3 and Llama 4 to the rest of, you know, the world.
Well, I think it's an interesting observation. And while you're talking, it just made me think, right? Like the different businesses that are going after it have very different advantages. And it reminds me, right, back to early discussions on Amazon Prime, where it's like, it doesn't matter really, because it's like they've got other businesses going. So, you know, maybe they take a hit as a loss leader somewhere for content, whatever. They get you to buy more stuff. Doesn't really matter. I think that's kind of what you're talking about with Meta, where it's like, you know, even in this interview, he said, we didn't think it would be important to have it be able to code because we're not trying to have people ask coding questions on WhatsApp. You know, he later went on to say, actually, you know, maybe coding is fairly important for answering all of these other things. But what they need to optimize for along the way is very different than, say, ChatGPT, where all they have is a tool. They don't have a platform. And so I think that does lead to different ways of development and just different thinking about it. And I thought it was interesting, right, when he was asked, why did you have so many GPUs to begin with? He was like, because we were constrained for reels, right? It's like, did he have any foresight? And they're like, well, it's like the foresight is there's always something, right? There's always something else that we need to do. So let's buy a bunch of these and buy more than we need, because we'll probably use them for something else. And that's, I think that's kind of different from, then you compare it to something like Tesla, where they have a very specific goal in mind, whereas Meta's coming at it from saying, maybe this isn't runaway AGI or anything like that, but along the way, we're going to find ways to monetize it.
Yeah. I think in that interview that he did, it was interesting to hear him take a more moderated approach or a more conservative timeline around AGI and some of the constraints that, you know, are there today that probably will lead to us not seeing the capabilities some predict in the next few years, but it's maybe a decade out. With one was energy, which I know, Joseph, you've done some work and thoughts on. And then I think the other component here is the open versus closed source nature. I, you know, find it interesting how much focus is on that, but in hearing him talk about why they do open source, it is to get the rest of the community to standardize on the practices that Meta has in place and the efficiencies, and maybe not the intuitive ways that you could recognize revenue or ROI on that type of investment. But I think he gave one example on Open Compute, which was them open sourcing part of their data center, and how that actually ended up easing the supply chain. It had other data centers standardizing around how they build theirs, which ended up, you know, resulting in significant cost savings. And if you think about that within the AI space, do you see something similar play out? Or is this, you know, most people are using a Llama open source model to a certain extent, and then they're able to integrate more efficiently with them. I think it's just so interesting in the way that they're approaching it. But Joseph, curious on energy, your thoughts there, how, you know, this is a significant constraint on training and compute generally.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we've heard it now from a few sources that energy is sort of this big roadblock. You know, in order to make these models more and more performant, you need more and more compute. And just to kind of quantify that a little bit, Llama 3 was trained on, I think it was 6.7 million GPU hours for H100s. And if you, bearing in mind the last couple of generations of Llama models were trained on A100s, but if you kind of convert the performance of an A100 to an H100, that's like a 14x step up in compute generation over generation. So as these models become significantly larger and more performant, or not even larger, just more performant, right? You need a lot more compute, and that brings a lot of energy needs with it. I think Meta, from what we've heard, is in a really good place in terms of having access to the infrastructure for these kinds of problems. I think, you know, compared to some of the competitors that are maybe less experienced when it comes to building out that kind of data center infrastructure. But yeah, eventually, I think you hit a roadblock where, and Zuckerberg was talking about this in his interviews, where you're going to need a small nuclear power plant just to provide energy to a single data center to train a single model, right? Which is extraordinary to think about.
I'd say let's call it a speed bump, not a roadblock.
Speed bump, right? Yeah, sorry. Right? Like, yeah,
this isn't. I don't think this is an insurmountable thing.
Of course, yeah.
Right. It's certainly a speed bump. I don't think you say that this is a block.
Right. Yeah. It's a challenge to overcome, but one that I think we will see happen in the near future. But I think in the meantime, it's where what you can do with the compute that you have matters a lot more, right, in terms of the efficiencies that can be developed there. One of the exciting things that came out of the Llama 3 blog was that Meta was able to see a 3x improvement in training efficiency since they trained Llama 2, right? So they're able to do a lot more with the compute that they have access to. And I think we're going to see that mm-hmm. continue to scale up as well as they also get access to more compute, more energy infrastructure.
And we've had this debate before just on open versus close. What do you think about his thoughts around, you know, why it makes more sense to open source, you know, most of their learnings? I'm curious because we now have, you know, directly from Zuckerberg, the reasoning. So curious what you think there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm biased as a general supporter of open models. I'm really encouraged to see this happening. As you guys were talking about sort of the monetization strategies for Meta, right? My thought on all of this is, what are we going to see the rest of the community do with a 400 billion parameter open source model that performance wise is competitive with GPT-4 and Claude 3, right? It's starting to reach that performance level where you can start to build agentic workflows on it more reliably. And I think that's something the community is going to kind of take off with and run with throughout all of this, right? Previous open source models were impressive, especially for their size. But, you know, we've never really had something open sourced that's capable of this level of performance. So I think that's encouraging. In terms of his reasoning why, I think it makes a lot of sense to kind of have democratize access to a certain level of AI capabilities so that it doesn't get concentrated in the hands of just a few players. So I like this point about saying, it's one thing to be concerned about giving everybody access to a powerful AI, but there's a whole nother concern, which is that a very powerful AI will only be accessible to two or three companies, right? And so I think, you know, it's really encouraging to see support from Meta in terms of democratizing access to that kind of powerful AI to make sure it's not just two or three providers that have access to it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to coin mutual assured intelligence as the open source ethos. Because I write they drew the parallel there. But so go around, tell your friends, spread the word. Nick and Joseph, when you were talking, more parallels that popped up into my mind on similarities with the open sourcing in the digital and physical world is kind of what happened with EVs and batteries, right? Where Tesla spearheaded form factors and, you know, for a while, it's like, oh, this is the secret sauce. Why are you sharing this? Who has the IP? Is it LG? Is it Tesla? It's like, it doesn't really matter because now there's like an oversupply of this form factor of batteries. And that's probably far more beneficial to a company trying to build a lot of electric cars than having that specific IP that's probably not that differentiating long term. So it's like that supply chain under valued side of the open source component. And then that's the yeah. I'll also just throw in, if you're talking energy as a speed bump, Tesla, it'll be interesting to see and I'm sure we'll hear in the earnings call, I don't know if this is going to come out pre or post, but they're certainly experts in energy and also it sounds like joining the compute arms race. So it'll be interesting to see if they have any novel solutions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think on the, you know, after hearing from Zuckerberg, my appreciation from open source has incrementally gone up just from the standpoint that it really does. And I didn't appreciate this point before, but it does help align the market and move the market forward in a more efficient manner when everyone's working on the same standards. Because if you have everyone competing and you don't understand exactly what the direction is that your competitors are taking, that can potentially, you know, cause bottlenecks that otherwise wouldn't be necessary. And especially in the nascent days of a technology, you want the market to be aligned on certain standard goals and practices that will ultimately help it progress in a faster, more efficient manner. And I think that's what he's pointing towards. You know, you need someone out there leading the charge, helping that long tail of developers standardize on tools that otherwise they would have to build themselves. And, you know, you don't necessarily want them to be spending time building some of this, you know, more in the weeds technology that, you know, could be, it is just the great democratizing factor. You know, don't spend time trying to figure out what we've already figured out, push the boundaries of what we haven't figured out next, but do it on our tools. And it ultimately helps us and it helps you.
And it's not even figuring it out, right? It's even just having access to the capability of doing this. I mean, who has 600,000 H100s worth of compute, right?
Right. Yeah. Right. Right.
Okay. As we wrap this up, Joseph, quick question for you. We'll see how this ages, but it's always good to take a stand. OpenAI, it seems like they've always been a step ahead. They're working on GPT-5. Do you think that comes out and blows people's mind, or do you think that they're actually being caught by the Llama 3s, the Claude 3s, and other players in the space?
I think, and maybe I'm hedging my bets with this answer a little bit, but I think both, right? I think GPT-5 is going to come out, and I think, yeah, it will be mind-blowing what it's capable of. And then at the same time, we are seeing a very rapid rate of development from Meta, from Anthropic, even compared to OpenAI, right? OpenAI is improving quickly, but I mean, if you look at the rate of improvement generation over generation that Meta is accomplishing, it's even faster, right? So I think, you know, yeah, for most use cases, I think open source is going to catch up very quickly, and it's going to rapidly become good enough for most day-to-day things that we're going to use AI for. I think that closed models like OpenAI are going to stick around for a while, where that, you know, frontier of performance is still needed and still useful. But yeah, it is encouraging to see sort of a democratization and, easier access to highly performant AIs. Although, yeah, I think OpenAI, given where it is right now, will probably stay in a leadership position in the near future. But after a couple of years, I'm not sure if that's going to continue to be the case.
There you have it. All right. We'll see everyone next week. Joseph, thank you for joining us and sharing your insights. Follow Joseph. He posts an update to this chart every time a model is released, and it's a good way to track what's happening. I'll just throw out there, there's a great article from Bloomberg on Redwood Materials and battery recycling. They're at a run rate of 20 gigawatt hours a year. I think that's more than anyone thought just a handful of years ago. It's just amazing how quickly they're moving. That's enough for like 250,000 EVs. 95% of the raw materials in batteries are recyclable. So long term, you really minimize the amount of new material you need to mine. So if you're looking for some battery material to read, go check it out.